Hello, everybody, and welcome to our next episode of Retail Ramblings. I'm excited to get into the all the happenings in retail this week. I think it's been a really huge kind of month almost in retail. But before we jump into it, I just want to go over and review what we covered in our last episode. So we'll first talk about the winners. So, Marsha, I'll let you kick us off this week.
Yeah, so the winner that I spoke about last week was Frank Body. So this is an Australian brand that kind of started out as a complete e-commerce play. They've started moving into some brick and mortar retail, and they've also released a new part of a product line, which was used to be just the scrubs and things like that. They've now introduced the lip line as well. So they're definitely on their eyes.
Yeah, fantastic. And it's always good to see an Aussie brand do good overseas. The winner that I discussed was retail in general, and it was a really easy one to present because I wasn't making any enemies. And that was basically due to the growth that was seen in September in North America, in the United States, I should say. In the retail sector, it was the largest single month of growth since 2015, which is really exciting. How about on the loser side, Marsha?
So on the loser side, I had Tootsie Rolls, and they had a pretty spooky time around Halloween themselves. You know, their expectations weren't looking too great, and their numbers were really trending downwards due to kind of lack of innovation and just being outpaced by competitors in the space.
Yeah, and I focused on L'Oreal and their use of a mineral called mica, and it's a really interesting discussion. So if you haven't listened back to the previous episode, I'd really recommend and go and listen to that, because it's a problem that a lot of organizations face, particularly in the manufacturing process, of knowing where your materials are being sourced from and whether it's sustainable and socially responsible as well.
Great. And on the retail roadmap side of things, we spoke about independent beauty brands, indie brands, and how large retailers are cashing in on their moment. So this really, we spoke about the trend of how indie brands are really on the rise, and how some bigger brands are either acquiring or trying to kind of replicate them in what they're doing to go to market.
And for the data dive, we spoke about Ripple Metrics and their ability to measure foot traffic in store and make metrics consistent across online and offline for a back office omnichannel view, which is a word that is pretty overused, but it is something that is really important. And again, a really interesting discussion if you haven't heard it already. So let's jump into the retail winners and losers for this particular episode. So Marsha, do you want to kick us off for the first winner that we have for this particular episode?
I do, yeah. So the winner that I'm going to be speaking about is Mac. But before I jump into that, I kind of want to take a step back and actually speak about a webinar that I had the pleasure of hosting last week. So I had a chance to moderate a panel with four incredible beauty industry consultants. And we spoke about the big trends that are happening in the industry, what brands should be doing with those trends, and also went through a really lengthy sort of panel discussion and audience Q&A. So one of the trends that we spoke about on that webinar was the trend of athleisure really taking hold on the beauty side of things as well in retail. So with that, basically, there's the trend of consumers really taking care of themselves in terms of exercising and nutrition and so on, really caring about their health. And brands in both the fashion side of things and beauty are kind of capitalizing that. So on the beauty side of things, brands are introducing products that are really easy to use. Compact, solutions that are kind of like 3-in-1, for example. So MAC was one that kind of jumped out at me this week. So they've actually are announcing a really exciting collaboration with fitness brand Puma. And they announced this just recently on Instagram, was sort of just like a post that had both of their logos. And saying that your favorite hues are taking a big step in a whole new direction. Stay tuned for a kicking collaboration coming soon. # Puma Max, # for all time. So I think this is actually really exciting. And it's kind of like, if you look at the comments on that post and all the excitement that is happening from consumers, I really think that they're going to be a winner with this launch. And I think they're doing the right thing by kind of capitalizing on this athleisure trend that is on trend with their brand. And I think the collaboration makes a lot of sense. So I'm really excited to see what's going to come out of it. But I definitely wanted to include them as a winner this week.
Yeah, and you're right. And the webinar was a really interesting discussion. I can't remember who exactly spoke about it. Was it Lisa Adams or... I can't remember exactly
who. So it was Rosanna Roberts. She's a color and trends consultant, and she spent her whole career pretty much analyzing trends in the beauty industry and how colors and trends are being taken up by brands and really forecasting what the future of beauty is going to look like.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was a really great discussion there.
She had some great insight in the whole athleisure trend, and that's something we obviously focus on largely in Retail Ramblings, is the trends within retail. And it's really great to hear those guest experts give their opinions as well and kind of align with what we're reading and what we're hearing within the industry. So if you haven't heard it out there, you haven't seen the webinar, and you are in the beauty industry, and even if you're not, strongly recommend to go back and listen to that. I do want to mention something else, and I hope that our audience loves the banter out there, but it's really funny, Marcia, how we say Puma, and you say Puma, which for me is kind of humorous. I thought I'd throw that in there. I kind of throw some sort of Australianism in every episode. So that one stood out to me.
Yeah, I'm thinking, that doesn't sound quite right to me.
Who is Puma? And because we say Puma, it's kind of like the car brand. You guys say Jaguar, and we say Jaguar, right? So... That's another one. Anyway, I'm not going to bog us down too much with that sort of stuff. I'm going to jump across to my winner for this particular week. So the winner that I've got is both big box retailer Lowe's, who we feature quite often, and also Black & Decker brand Craftsman Tools, I should say. Now, the reason that Lowe's primarily is the winner is there was an agreement struck this week for Lowe's to be the primary retail outlet for all Craftsman Tools. Now, to give you a little bit of background on who Craftsman are, Craftsman was a brand that was owned by Sears, and they started in 1927 and were kind of synonymous with the Sears brand name. So all the products were retailed through Sears and Kmart as well, because they obviously own them. And they were something that was, the North American household essentially grew up with those Craftsman tools. Now, they were acquired in 2017, earlier this year, by Stanley Black & Decker for $900 million. And this was in large part due to Sears liquidating a lot of their assets to try and boost their revenue. The reason that Black & Decker acquired them, and the reason that I've recognized Lowe's as the big winner for this, is that Sears always kept the distribution of Craftsman tools really tight. So only 10% of Craftsman tools sales actually came outside of the Sears chains, which includes Kmart and all their other affiliated chains, which is for Stanley and Black & Decker and also Lowe's is a huge opportunity. So there's three big reasons why I think Lowe's is the big winner, Marcia. And I think the first is brand recognition, right? So everybody knows Craftsman tools. Everybody grew up with them. And they were a brand that was really highly recognized within the Sears chain. You'd go in there and buy a power drill and it would generally be Craftsman. From there, Lowe's is going to exclusively sell these products. So Home Depot doesn't have access to these. Ace Hardware, Home Hardware, all the other major retailers don't have access to Craftsman tools. They're going to be sold exclusively through Lowe's. Now, from a perspective of Lowe's, from Lowe's perspective and Craftsman tools perspective, the opportunity for profit is huge. So Stanley Black & Decker acquired the brand based on the fact that only 10% of sales have come out of the Sears network. They've come out and said that the brand generated about $200 million in revenue outside of Sears. So that 10% was about $200 million. And they have a goal of increasing that to $1 billion. So that's a massive, massive win for both Lowe's and Stanley Black & Decker by acquiring the brand. Moving further from that, and this is probably the biggest reason that this piece of news stood out to me, is where it puts Lowe's in comparison to the Home Depot. And we talk about this a lot and talk about how intense the competition is between the two brands. The Home Depot has Milwaukee Tools, and Milwaukee Tools is only exclusively sold through the Home Depot, and they've used that as a really strong point of differentiation against Lowe's. Lowe's now has a response back, okay? So Craftsman Tools essentially is now Lowe's Milwaukee Tools. What this does is this allows Lowe's to be seen in the same sort of light as the Home Depot. The Home Depot is generally recognized as the leader and that Lowe's is the chaser, and I think this is something that's really important for them to try and differentiate their brand from Lowe's and really catch up as well with the Home Depot, I should say. So for that particular reason and for the fact that, there's going to be a huge flag fall for the amount of profit that they're going to make. It's made me pick out Lowe's as the big winner for this week.
I think that's really interesting, Chris. And I think, I mean, we've spoken about this at length in past episodes and also in our ebook about the Home Depot. Really, like, Lowe's and Home Depot are always at each other's heels, and they're always kind of iterating on their strategies and taking market share back and forth from each other. So yeah. I think this is just another example that goes to show exactly how competitive the space is for those two retailers and the brands that are competing within the two retailers as well.
Yeah, exactly right. All right, Marsha, we've gone through our winners for this episode. Who have we got as our first loser?
So as our first loser this week, we have the Danskin brand, which is owned by Iconics Brand Group. So this brand is a dance and athletic sort of company. And the reason that they're a loser is that they were recently dumped by Walmart. So they were removed from almost 4,000 of their U.S. stores. They were removed from their website 15 months before that. And this move made a mess of their shares. They went down 62%.
Wow.
The lowest in 14 years, which is crazy. They also lost around $15.5 million of annual revenue through Walmart. And they've also had some pretty negative results in some of their other retailers. They were dropped by a few others as well, which is really unfortunate. The reason that I wanted to speak about this brand as a loser this week is really, you know, this happens once in a while in retail, and it's a story that all brands need to follow, regardless of what industry and who their customers are, which retailers they sell into. It's a reminder that this could happen. You know what, if you're not hitting your numbers, if you're not innovating within your space, if you don't have a great understanding of your customers, and most importantly, if you're not coming in as a partner to your retailer and you're not coming to them with relevant data, with relevant numbers, with interesting promotions, and you're not really treating their relationship as a partnership, this is a reminder that, you know, this could happen to any brand out there, that you could be delisted, and this could happen to you. So they are the loser for this week that I wanted to speak about. That's a super negative result, but overall I just wanted to speak to the lessons.
Yeah, and I'll jump in there, and it's a lot about what we kind of do at Askewity, and you know, I don't really want to give us a plug, but we see it every day, and as important as data and analytics and all those things are, the biggest thing is about the relationship, right? Walmart comes from a position of power, and as a brand, you need to understand that you need to bring something to the table that differentiates yourself and makes a valuable partnership out of your brand and the retailer. And whether that is data or analytics or promotions or whatever it may be, to sit on your hands and do nothing is just going to result in failure. And I think Danskin is a really good example of it. It's never good to see an organization get delisted. This just so happened to be in the news, but there's plenty of organizations that we hear anecdotally within our circles of brands that just get taken off the shelves and you won't even know. And, you know, they'll be out of business in a few years' time, right? And that's the really unfortunate thing, that people sitting on their hands and people not being proactive and understanding that retail is changing is a really scary thing.
Yeah, and I think something that I do want to point out here on the positive side, so Danskin is still being sold by Lord & Taylor, by Costco, and TJ Maxx. So, you know, it's not the end of the world.
No, of course not.
So it's, I mean, Walmart is obviously a huge loss, but I think if they really kind of reorganize and they learn the lessons of what went wrong here, and how they could be a better retail partner to the retailers which they are still sold in, I think they could turn things around. So that is a positive note there. But again, a reminder to everyone that this could happen.
Yeah, definitely. It's definitely a lesson learned. So I'll jump into my loser for this particular episode. It's probably not as grim as, say, Danskin, but it's paint manufacturer Sherwin-Williams. They actually didn't have a great quarter in Q3, and I kind of wanted to point that out and kind of recognize the importance of making sure that you're on top of inventory and making sure that you're on top of natural disasters that actually occur in whatever region that you may be selling into. We've talked a lot about the hurricanes that have occurred in North America over the summer of 2017. And this has adversely affected Sherwin-Williams' performance in Q3. So for a bit of a background on Sherwin-Williams, if you're not too familiar who they are, they're the largest paint manufacturer in the world, so they should be a pretty recognizable brand. they have aggressive growth plans. There's a lot I've been reading about them lately about how much they want to continue to grow and how they've really taken a stranglehold of the paint market. They're sold through a wide network of distributors, including home centers, independent retailers, mass merchandisers, but they have 4,200 of their own stores as well. So they've got quite a diversified product range. They've got quite a diversified distribution strategy. So it's a really interesting brand to kind of feature. In terms of the numbers, their profits dropped by 18% in Q3, and they attribute this largely down to two things. So the first is that they had a large merger with competitor Valspar, which has adversely affected their ability to accrue profit, as well as that the hurricanes in North America have really hurt their bottom line. So they've come out and said the storms cost the brand around $50 million in sales, and this is something you can't control, right? This is something that is really difficult to anticipate and do something about, but it's something that every brand needs to be aware and ready for. There is silver lining, of course. The acquisition of Valspar means that in future there's going to be revenue that will be accrued that wouldn't have previously been accrued as they continue through the process of the merger. Net sales grew with the brand, which is always a good sign. Same stores sales grew. And the acquisition of Valspar resulted in a higher share price. So I guess there is a little bit of silver lining for Sherwin-Williams. Hasn't been a great quarter, and a lot of financial results are coming out for the previous quarter now, and they've been recognized for the big loser for the performance that they had.
That's really unfortunate. Do you think there's anything they could do to kind of turn things around?
Not really, to be honest. I think I don't think it's going to be a turnaround thing. I think, as we said, with natural disasters, it's so hard to anticipate, and it's something that we've really focused on in the previous episodes. So if you haven't heard those, go back and listen to them, because we talk a lot about the repercussions of natural disasters in North America, or that have happened in North America for some big brands. But it's so difficult to anticipate, right?
Like, it is, yeah. And it's really a testing ground for both brands and retailers.
Exactly.
Some are going to come out on top, but some are going to be very hurt. And that's the nature of it.
Yeah, it's not necessarily featured in our show today, but there was a really interesting article that I was reading from a financial organization that talked about the four big winners of the hurricanes. And the Home Depot, inevitably, and Lowe's were both featured, and there were a few paint companies, I believe, that were featured as well. So it just goes to show there's opportunity to be had everywhere. It's obviously a really, really dismal situation about what occurred down south, but you know, there's opportunity to be had, and it's up to the retailer to be nimble and be able to respond to these particular events when they occur.
Exactly, yep.
Okay, so we've gone through the winners and losers for this particular episode, and we're up to the retail roadmap. And before this episode, I've kind of pulled Marsha aside and I said, Marsha, let's give a few more minutes to the retail roadmap this week, because it's something that I think is really exciting to present on, and something that is a topic of real interest to both retailers and brands that are out there. And I'm going to talk about the repercussions of the topic once we get into it, but I guess I should introduce what I'm talking about. So I want to talk about and discuss the future of malls and retail spaces. So malls have always been one of the social and cultural epicenters of life in Western countries, right? Australia, America, the UK, Germany, all the places that I've been lucky enough to see, and I'm sure you've seen it, the mall is kind of where everything happens, right? That's where we do our shopping.
It's the center of commerce, and that's where people want to hang out.
Exactly. But a lot of this stuff, and the reason that I'm so excited to talk about this topic is this topic's kind of a culmination of all the previous things that we've spoken about in the retail roadmap. So the structure of malls are changing. That we all know, and there's websites out there. There's like www.deadmalls.com featuring all these malls in North America that have kind of shut down.
I can't believe that exists.
It does exist.
What's on that website? I haven't taken a look at.
Not great. Just trying to click around on it, and I couldn't really get too far. But I recommend everybody out there to go have a look. But the reason that I want to talk about it is the trends that kind of intersect with this, and the restructuring of malls and the changing of mall design has largely come down to the growth of online retailing, which we've talked about, the demise of department stores, which we literally talk about every episode just about, VR and AR, and another huge one that I think we talked about in episode 6 or 7 was experiential and how important that's really becoming. So what does this all mean, right? So what has happened? Since 2014, 20% of mall owners in North America have removed the M word, so to speak, from their official title after renovation. So malls are changing what they basically are. They're changing their names to places like Village and Town Center and Shops, and really trying to diversify what sort of offerings they have. So in a survey done by JLL, 16% of mall landlords have admitted to spending money on demalling, so changing the style of their malls. Some owners have taken vacated big box spaces, so places like Lowe's or Home Depot's used to be, and turned them into call centers and medical offices. Fashion is no longer the pool that it once was, which is a huge thing. I remember when I was a kid, you'd always go to the mall to kind of go to those retailers that were selling clothing, but it's no longer the pool that it once was. And experiential is really becoming the focus. So malls are realizing that food courts and gastronomic services are really why people are coming to malls. A really great example of, it's not necessarily a mall, but in the traditional concept, but kind of a mall in the new concept that I want to talk about is a place called Box Park. Now, this is actually in the UK, or it's in London, so it's not actually in North America, but it's a really great prototype of the kind of structure and model that malls are going down. And the reason I want to feature it, Mastery, is I've actually been there in the flesh and seen it and seen what it's like and seen the kind of experience that it is. Now, there's a few located in London, one's in Croydon, one's in Shoreditch. I've been to the one in Shoreditch. And they're a new concept style mall using shipping containers basically as micro stalls.
Oh, that's so cool.
It's really, really cool. And there's big name brands there. I remember when I was there, Nike was there. I don't believe they're there anymore. Having a look at their website now, they actually have Deciem on there, who we've featured.
Yeah.
And one of their brands, The Ordinary, is there as well. Kiehl's is there. Hype is there, who is a clothing manufacturer in the UK. So there's some really big brand names there. But what makes it really interesting is that there's a bar there and there's a lot of restaurants there. And it's a really cool environment to go around and go with your friends and say, have a drink, but also do a bit of casual shopping, right? And that's where shopping is heading. That's where malls are heading. There's a really great quote that I picked up on an article that I was reading about the Croydon Box Park, which I actually haven't been to. And it talks about something called Fight Club, right? This is not the movie or anything like that, but it's a drum and bass workout event that actually happens within this mall. And the quote was by a social influencer by the name of Becky Saunders. And she came out and she said, "I love that Box Park hosts fitness events at the weekend. I often travel across London to try different classes, and to have Box Park in my hometown putting on these types of events is amazing." Now, you have to think about this in the context of the type of person that's going there and what they're going to do once they're in this environment, right? Malls are all about footfall, getting people into the door. And that's why at the end of malls, you obviously had your Anchor store. So you had your Sears or your Hudson's Bay or whoever may be there as your largest department store. But that's no longer getting footfall. What's getting footfall is getting people into the door via events. And that's where this whole idea of the mall changing is really exciting and why I want to talk about it.
I think that's so brilliant. I mean, I could totally see myself going to something like that. And then, you know, after... I would explore the mall for sure. Like, I'd want to take a look at some stores. I'd want to hang out potentially with some people after the class. That's absolutely brilliant. I love it.
Exactly right. And that's the whole way and that's the whole direction that we've spoken about. And this is why I'm so excited to talk about it. All the different trends coming together and culminating in one particular place is the mall and the structure of the mall, which makes it super interesting for us to talk about, considering that we talk about trends. Now, we talk a lot about retailers and brands, and that's where our real interest comes in, Marsha. So what does this mean for retailers, right? Now, retailers have kind of tried the store-in-a-store concept. It's been done. Sephora and JCPenney is probably a really specific example that I can think of that's been super successful, particularly for JCPenney.
Yeah, Best Buy is another one that does it fairly well.
And what these brands are now realizing that their stores within malls, the same concepts need to apply. They need to realize that they no longer are able to draw people just purely based on the products that they sell. They need to realize that they need to entice people to come in to try and sell products once they're within the store. This whole topic came to light when I was doing a bit of research on Lowe's. So Lowe's will actually have stores over the holiday period within their own stores in a partnership with organization. They're an electronics retailer called Beta to sell and educate shoppers on smart home products. Now, these stores within a store will be set up in 70 stores across the United States. And they will emulate a lab-like atmosphere that empowers customers to make informed decisions. And I think this here is something that is a modern day practical example of the way that the structure is going, right? We're going to see this so much more. We're going to see brands collaborating with each other, brands working with each other to help each other's competencies sell each other's products.
For sure. Like, even going back to one of the winners that I spoke about, to MAC and Puma, like, you'd never think those two brands would partner, but there we go.
It's the same thing, right? And this is the great thing. This is why I'm so excited, Marsha, to talk about this. And I'm probably jumping a little bit all over the place because I'm so damn excited. But this even ties back to the dance skin thing, right?
Yeah.
It's all about relationships. It's all about partnerships. It's all about making sure that the retailer and the brand are on the same page, right? So if you're coming to a retailer and you know your retailer is experimenting with this, Lowe's is a great example. And in the hardware industry, you're not, you know, for those who are out in the hardware industry, it's something that you need to have your finger on the pulse on. But you need to come to the table and understand what promotions that you can do that's going to drive people to the store at Lowe's. You need to understand what results are going to come from your promotions. You need to be able to see the sales uplift. You need to be able to report on this. But you also need to be able to innovate and be novel in the concepts that you're providing to the store, because the traditional structures are not working, right? And there's so many hardware companies that we've dealt with who have been around for 100 years, 150 years, who need to be able to respond and adapt to change. And sitting on their hands, I've used that phrase a few times in this episode, is not going to benefit those organizations. So it's a really interesting topic to me. I think it's a really, it's not so much a trend that's occurring, but rather a culmination of many different trends coming together and really highlighting where retail is heading in the future.
I agree. It's really amazing to see your passion about it. And it's really like, I'm totally with you there. It is super exciting. And I mean, it just goes to show, again, like we still are seeing all those crazy articles that retail is dying, retail is dead. It's not at all. It's just changing. And
exactly.
This just goes to show.
And we talk about that in episode 7, I believe, about bricks and mortar. It's just changing, right?
Yeah.
Everything's changing. There's that. I hate the word death because it's so final, right? It's just things are changing. People need to adapt. Organizations need to adapt. And this is a really, really great example of it.
Great. So up next, we're going to jump into the data dive. And since we let Chris kind of have his moment there with his long section on retail, we're going to keep this one fairly short. So in the data dive this week, I want to speak about Shiseido. And they've announced that they are acquiring a company called Giren. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that correctly. So Giren is actually a data company which produces technology and artificial intelligence platforms. And that's going to allow Shiseido to really transform the customer experience by taking personalized beauty to the next level. So I wanted to speak about this for a couple of different reasons. So in past episodes, we spoke about this trend of different acquisitions that are happening in retail and particularly in the beauty industry. We've seen other examples of other brands either acquiring incubators or partnering with incubators, bigger brands acquiring indie brands. And this is just another example. And I don't think this trend is going anywhere. I think we're going to keep seeing more acquisitions, more partnerships, more innovative ways to market. So going back to the actual example, the technology that's produced by this company, Giren, it ranges from makeup, virtual try-on, tutorials, color matching, personalized recommendations, face tracking, and even skin tone detection. And all of this can be accessed on a smartphone, tablet, desktop, and even a smart mirror powered by full HD augmented reality. So we're seeing this kind of technology. For example, Sephora is obviously amazing at this with their app and their smart mirrors and all the technology that they're using in store. It's really great to see a brand kind of take things into their own hands as well and to start really focusing on this. So the company that they've acquired, Giren, is going to become part of Shiseido's makeup center of excellence. And this joint venture is going to allow the cosmetics brand to really expand its capabilities in beauty customization. And ultimately, this is going to drive consumer engagement while providing unmatched customer experience. And I mean, that's what it's all about today in retail, an unmatched customer experience. So I think this is really exciting.
Yeah, I see. You mentioned the incubators before, and you know, keeping up with the news that's going on in retail, you really see L'Oreal and a lot of those other big. P&G is another huge one where they have, I think it's U-Foundry. Oh no, that's Unilever. Unilever have U-Foundry where they're constantly going out and looking for startups to partner with, and realizing how important it is to be up to date with modern technology. in such a competitive retail environment at the moment. So this is a really great example, and it's really, really fantastic that you pointed it out, Marsha.
Yeah, and it's actually another point that I should point out. This is this is a second one that Shiseido has acquired. So this really complements their other recent acquisition of Magico, which is another beauty personalization startup. So it's going to keep happening, and it's really exciting.
Yeah, fantastic. All right, so we've got through another episode of Retail Ramblings for this particular week. Just want to go back quickly over what we've covered today. So our first winner was MAC and Puma, which I'm probably saying wrong or right, depending where you come from on the planet. We also looked at Lowe's selling Craftsman tools. On our loser side of things, we had Danskin and the news that they'd recently been delisted, pardon me, from Walmart. And we also talked about paint company Sherwin-Williams and their quarter that wasn't so great in Q3. On our retail roadmap, which I was super excited about, we talked about the future of malls and retail brick and mortar stores. And finally, to wrap it all up, we talked about Shiseido and their recent acquisition of Gearon. I think you said it was. Was that?
I think so, yeah. Let's go
with that. So we've wrapped it up for another week. If you haven't followed us or subscribed, I should say, to our podcast yet on iTunes, please do so. Also, leave us a review. If you've got something interesting that you'd like us to touch or cover, a trend that's really bugging you and you want us to have a chat about it, let us know in the comments. We always appreciate feedback. But until next week, have a good time, and I hope you enjoyed the episode.
Bye, everyone.